I really like those previously ons when you watch television has the previously on, right? I always tell my spouse that the news hour should have previously on, and she says, what are they going to do, give you the entire course of human history? I was like, well, yeah, I like, you know, sometimes I'm out of context. I missed the news a few days. So previously on this dev room, the final ish session was almost the last panel last year. I made the case, much to everyone's chagrin, that SBOMs would be moot completely if we just had universal software freedom. The right to copy, share, modify, redistribute all the software. What would we need an SBOM for? We have all the source code. Everybody on the planet has all the source code for every line of software that they ever run. That's the world I'm working towards. We don't live in that world. But from my point of view, I haven't been a huge fan of SBOMs historically because I'm trying to build that world, not some intermediate world where some software is still proprietary. But you're correct, of course, that most people in the world believe my ideas are politically non-viable. In fact, I said in my main track talk yesterday that it is politically unviable in my lifetime that we'll have universal software freedom and universal software right to repair. So as I said in my talk yesterday at the main track, I spend most of my time looking for politically viable acts of rebellion that I can perform that will undermine the existing institutions to eventually make the things that are currently politically unviable to be politically viable. So after the panel last year, I talked to Alexios a lot. He's the guy I love to talk to about this stuff. I think he's the star of the SBOM world. So I sort of started talking about like what could SBOMs do to actually help with the things that I worry about, which is software rights and freedoms and true copyleft compliance and complete corresponding source code. So this talk is to put forward some ideas of how SBOMs and all the kinds of technology and stuff that you're all doing on mostly the ingestion side into your supply chains could actually help the side of the supply chain I care the most about. Now, I suspect most of you care primarily about the beginning and what I would call the beginning and the middle of the supply chain. The ingestion, the first stuff you take from there, and the middle. Kate's shaking her head. But I'm gonna do a quiz, Kate, so we'll find out. It turns out I only care about the end of the supply chain, which is the actual consumer who buys the product. Now, I realize you have to care about a lot more than that. So my question is, maybe you care a little. So let's do a show of hands. How many people think the individual consumer, when they walk into an electronics store and buy a product that has software in it, should they receive a software bill of materials for that product? Raise your hand. Great! We have full agreement. Almost. I think maybe one or two hands didn't go up. So I wasn't sure how that poll was going to go, but it went the way I hoped it would. So that means we have common ground, right? Because I'm worried about that consumer. That's really the only person I'm worried about. I don't care what happens to all these companies that do things and live in capitalism. Like, I don't care. I care about the individual consumer who's like, I have a device and I don't have the ability to fix my software. And I think they ought to get an SBOM. So let's take the rest of this talk considering that since we all agree, let's assume we get that done. Now, I'm going to need your help on that because we're going to have to like lobby legislatures and regulatory bodies to mandate that, because companies are not going to do that unless they're legally required to give that SBOM. So we'll have to work on that, but that's not what this talk's about. This talk assumes we've done that work together over the next 10 years. We win. Every consumer has to get an SBOM for every device they have that contains software. So what does that SBOM need to look like to get what I care about, which is copyleft compliance? Almost every single product on the market has at least a little bit of copylefted software in it. I know lots of your companies work really hard to do your ingestion perfectly and remove every single shred of GPL because you hate copyleft and you hate the idea that you might have to share your source code. I get it. But generally speaking, especially if it's like system on a chip or embedded, it's going to at least have Linux and BusyBox and some of those other operating system pieces that are under the GPL. So I think we have to account for the question of copyleft compliance, and that's what I focus on, is the end consumer's copyleft rights as a third-party beneficiary under the GPL to receive the complete corresponding source code as defined by the GPL and other copyleft licenses. Okay, so I have yet, I will tell you, I do license compliance almost every day of my life since 1999. And I have never, ever, ever seen anything that looks anything like what you all would call an SBOM during a license compliance action, because they're not there. I don't know where they are, but they're not in front of me when I'm doing the license compliance. I don't see them in the product. I don't see them when I'm doing enforcement. I've never been offered one. I've never been said, well, we have this SBOM. We can prove this, that, or the other thing. Isn't there. But I think it would be great if they were there. The reason I haven't seen them is I live a lot like Donald Knuth on this stuff, right? Donald Knuth has this great quote about email. I think it's wonderful. He really makes a great case that we spend way too much time trying to rush to be the first person to deal with something, to be on the top of things. And there's a lot to be said for smart people living on the bottom of things. Well, I really live on the bottom of things. This is my version of Donald Knuth's quote about SBOMs. I think that what I'm trying to do often doesn't relate very well to the kind of work you're doing, but I'd like to find a way that we could maybe merge together what I'm trying to do when I sit there and try to take that incomplete source release, which I'll explain what that is in a minute, try to build it and reinstall the software back to the binaries. Like, that's very different from the SBOM stuff you're doing on the top of things. And like, as soon as it comes in, I know what was in there and I've got it all cataloged, right? But maybe there's something that you all can produce that I would see on the other end that might actually help. And that's what I want to talk about. So I'm going to star in this movie that I think I'm in, that I think Alexis is directing. Yeah. I think you're the director of this thing. So I'll have to learn how to stop worrying and love the SBOM. Thank you, kid. I'd like to spend a few hours trying to get to the correct source release. So I've been thinking about this all year since the last thing. Not like constantly. I mean, SBOMs are not a big part of my life, I must admit. I'm sorry to say. I know they're a big part of yours. But every week or two, I would think about this question of like, well, is there something SBOMs could do for a copyleft compliance? And I have a couple of ideas. I'm just going to kind of throw them out here. It's only half an hour talk. It's the end of the day. Everybody wants to get trains and eat food and all the things. So I'm just going to quickly go through them. First, I want to really throw some quick definitions, because these are terms we use in copyleft compliance. If you actually get nothing else out of this talk, I hope you'll hold on to these definitions, because this is kind of the mindset we're in when we're at the other end, receiving these non-compliant devices and having to figure out how to get them into compliance. And these terms will kind of inform some of the things you think about SBOM. So complete corresponding source, which we abbreviate CCS, is kind of the generalized term that we use to refer to that source code that was required to be provided under the copyleft license. Now, the actual words come from GPLv2. GPLv3 calls this the corresponding source. It doesn't have the word complete. It has a defined term instead. But we've been using the term CCS for years, and so that tends to be our go-to. No matter what the copyleft license is, we say the CCS is the thing that meets the source code provision correctly of the copyleft license in question. We also use the phrase CCS candidate. Now, during a license enforcement action, that refers to a proffered offer of CCS that may or may not actually be CCS. So it could be that we haven't checked it yet. We got it from the vendor, and we haven't had time to try to build it and see if it works and check to see if everything that's supposed to be there is there, et cetera. Or we've checked it, and we found out that it's not actually CCS because it's incomplete. That leads me to our shorthands we use for types of violations of copyleft licenses. The one that I was just describing is the incomplete source one. That's a case where we got a CCS candidate somehow, whatever way we got it, and it did not actually meet the source code provision. There was source code missing. There were scripts used to control compilation and installation missing. There was stuff marked as proprietary that was supposed to be marked under GPL. Happens all the time, it turns out. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten a Linux directory with 10 files in it that say .c file compiles right into Linux and says proprietary, not for distribution. So it actually has to be GPL, it turns out. So that's what an incomplete source is. A no source or offer is the shorthand we use for a GPL or copy left generally violation, where we bought a product, we figured out there's Linux in it by like running strings on the binary or whatever, or some GPL software in it, and there is no offer in the box, there's no offer on their website, there's no way we can find to even ask for source code, and there was no source code included. Finally, and this one I'm not going to talk about much today, just for completion I'm throwing this in, is the offer fail, where we test the offer, there's some offer there, we ask for the source code, and they just ignore us, which they like to do. Oh shoot, I forgot to turn my notifications off again. I did email you back, Denver. most copyleft violations are these days of the incomplete source. In the old days, they were mostly no source or offer. Now they're mostly incomplete source. And I think, interestingly enough, SBOMs may really be able to help us with regard to the incomplete source problem. For example, if we had this world where every end consumer had to get the SBOM, right? And it was an SPDX format. And that SBOM had a file checksum for every source file filled in so that we could see the checksums of all the source that were there when they built it. We could at least test whether the source code candidate they gave us matched the thing that was in the SBOM, A, and B, we could maybe figure out if some source is missing, and C, figure out at least the binary question of does it differ from upstream or not. Now, this only works if they don't lie to us, and I'll tell you, most vendors who sell electronics products lie to their consumers. It's just a fact. But if we can solve the lie problem, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, this would go a long way. I think that having all this information as part of our CCS checking would be a useful thing. So, however, this is the thing I want to flag for all of you, is that a lot of times what you think is the source code